8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
All right, guys, what's up? Welcome into Talk to Me here on KnotFest.com. As always, I'm Joshua Toomey, joined by the one and only Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
We are spectacular.
And this week, man, I've got a hometown boy on the show, got Jelly Roll on the podcast. I did about an hour with him, so Chris and I aren't going to talk too much, but we've got some topics we definitely want to go over. And Jelly Roll, man, is one of those dudes that I heard about a couple of years ago. He was doing press at Louder Than Life. Okay. He is the only person from a band I've ever seen walk into the press tent, and before he would do an interview with you, you had to do a shot with him. And
nice.
he carried a bottle of some sort of vodka around with him, and he was, every time he sat down, if you wanted to interview Jelly Roll, you had to do a shot.
So what you're saying is you're going to go to every show that he plays from now on.
Yeah, it's funny, the interview we get into a little bit, but he's trying to lose 100 pounds because he's a big dude, and sure. And so he's been cutting out the alcohol and stuff, and I'm like you're gonna lose your rep, man. You lose your reputation if you do too much of that.
He needs to switch to just like clear, like Tito's or something. That's right. That's a little leaner, but you got to keep drinking. Come on. Right. That's part of your gig, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of those bands. It's like if Motley Crue just stopped drinking, things like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, whatever. Playing, let alone drinking. They should stop performing. It's terrible. Right.
But Jelly Roll did get into playing the Grand Ole Opry, which growing up in Nashville, a guy like that playing the Grand Ole Opry, awesome for him. Awesome for the Grand Ole Opry to realize that, you know, that style of music is out there and to bring somebody like that in the fold. Obviously, him being a Nashville guy, he's been on Bustin' with the Boys, the Tale of the Wand podcast. So I had to get the background of that and how he became friends with those guys.
Sure.
Just so much stuff, man. His career is fun to watch from afar.
And he's doing fantastic, man. That's the thing. You know, it's one thing to talk about this guy, and probably a lot of people listening don't know who that is. But man, like we were saying right before we got started, if you go look at his YouTube plays, the numbers are absolutely sick, man. You know, 100 million here, 80 million here, 180 million on this video. It's his music is clearly captured a huge audience right now.
Oh, yeah. And he invited me to a Titans game with him, so he's obviously number one in my book.
Well, he'll be number one if the offer comes true, right?
Right. Well, you know, there's always that saying of if those things are going to come true, if it's for real, you know, if it's not, I'm not going to hold it against him. We had a good time chatting. Sure. But yeah, towards the end, he's like, why don't you go to the game with me? And I'm like, you better not mess with me, man.
Nice.
But let's dive into some news, man. The one thing I wanted to hit you with was Judas Priest to tour as a quartet while former touring guitarist Andy Sneap focuses on his production work. You wrote a book about Judas Priest. I know you're a giant Judas Priest fan. Fans of the show know that I interviewed KK Downing a while back. And then fans of me in general know that, you know, my Judas Priest fandom is relatively new.
Sure.
and I took some heat in the past for not loving them right away. But I wanted to hit you with, you know, a band like that with such a well-known dual guitar attack touring as a quartet, man. How do you feel about that?
It's terrible. It's an embarrassment, dude. Straight up. There's no reason to do it at all. You know, there's so most fans, most of us hardcores, and I've seen Judas Priest all the way back. First time I saw him was in 84, I think. Like, you know, it was Scream for Vengeance tour, whatever year that was. And, you know, I mean, I've seen them all the way through, and you can't emphasize enough how much they put on that whole, the twin guitar attack,
right.
You know, the KK and Tipton thing. And it was hard to swallow the Firepower tour, where it was the big twin guitars of Richie Faulkner and Andy Sneap. That felt phony. That just felt terrible. this feels ridiculous. This just screams of backing tracks, you know, and just they've already been using backing tracks, I think, with Halford's voice, right, you know, peppering him up some. I just think it's sometimes you just got to call it a day, and it's time for them. It's time for them to call it a day. It's they're going to go out as an embarrassing sort of quasi tour with right. They're going to go out with Ozzy, who can barely stand, and then them, and it's really just the Rob Halford solo band, you know?
Yeah. And the one thing I wanted to go with this is, you know, obviously getting into the KK Downing interview, I read mm-hmm. the book.
Yeah.
Interviewed. I did so much stuff to like prepare for that. So I know how much KKA is pretty much predates all of them, you know, sure. and you know, got the name from a former band type stuff. So like Judas Priest to me is a lot to do with KK Downing.
Sure.
And KK is out there, honestly, just interview after interview after interview saying, you know, I wish they would invite me back. I wish they would do that. So you've got a guy who knows the songs already mm-hmm. that is an original member of the band that wants to be in the band. And you're going to go out there as a four piece. No matter what issues you have with KK Downing, you have to pull him back for this.
Right. And Judas Priest has enough money that they could do the separate bus thing or the yeah. separate, you know, separate transportation and just show up to be on stage together. They certainly do. They have big enough reputation to do that. And I agree with you. I mean, KK is around and wants to do it. He should be doing it, period. Yeah. You know, that being said, there's other guys that could do it. That's the embarrassing part to True. Me. It's not so much KK, while I admit that having KK would at least give it some legitimate credibility. The problem I have is that what's Roy Z doing as an example? Right. Roy knows every one of these songs as much as KK does. He played them with Halford for how many years?
Right.
You know, and he's not doing anything. He's producing records somewhere. Bring him in, have him do it. He certainly knows the parts. You know, that you can't tell me that there's not a good Judas Priest tribute band guitarist out there that couldn't right. do this. You know, it's that's the whole embarrassing part of it is you're going to take half the sound out of the performance, except you're not. It's going to be very obvious that you're miming your shows. And that just fucking blows, dude. Plain and simple. It's terrible. It's embarrassing for a band of that stature. To that would be like if Iron Maiden went out with one guitar player,
right? You know, and they go out with three, so
yeah. Or Limp Bizkit went out with just a jukebox instead right. of a instead of a scratcher. They just put a quarter in every time they switch to a new song and have it scratch for them. You know, it doesn't make any sense. It's clearly a management money thing, and it's just a pathetic way to end their career. To me, it's going out with a whimper.
How much money could they truly be saving, though? And then you've also got to, you know, counteract that with how many people are so mad and they're saying they're not going to go to a show because of the one guitar player thing. And then how many guitar players out there right now, like Jason Hook, of Five Finger Death Punch, he's out there. He's a hired gun type dude. Sure. And those type dudes would kill to tour as guitarist of Judas Priest. Probably do it for free.
Yeah, dude, the money, I understand not wanting to pay Andy Sneap. I do get that because Andy Sneap is his deal probably is built more on the fact of how much money is he going to lose by not doing production for right. a year than it is on making his, you know, $5,000 a show or whatever the number is. Yeah. You know, for him, I'm sure he backloads his deal with, hey, I'm like the in-demand producer. I would make $200,000 or whatever, $300,000. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure for him, maybe that's a consideration. But to just say, well, we're going to change the sound completely and go out and the press release, Jane Andrews needs a punch in the mouth because that press release was embarrassing. We're going out as a tight, fierce band. Shut up. No, you're not. You're not. You're going out as a solo artist with one guy that's from the original lineup, the bass player. You know, this is the same as Rat's Bobby Blotzer's Rat.
Right.
It's the same thing, man. It's just not. It, All this being said, I think the shows will be okay. I think it'll still be entertaining if you can just look past it and just watch the big Videotron and
right.
Rob Halford doing the robot when he plays Metal Gods and all that other shit that they do. But I don't know. I'm not going. There's no way I would go see this now. No possible way.
Well, there's some parallel like with Korn. When Head left Korn for a long time, they mm-hmm. replaced him a few times with you know Clint Lowry and a few other dudes like right. over time. But then at a certain point, Head came back to the band, and that's mm-hmm. because that was Head's position in the band. Then you've got bands like Skid Row that Sebastian's out doing his thing, Skid Row's out doing their thing. But when they needed a singer, I wish they would have just brought Sebastian back sure. in. Because, or, you know, there's other bands like a Great White or something where there's two versions out there. Just put them together, get your differences out of the way sure. and give the fans what they want. I mean, you've got so much stuff out there. You've got things like, I get it. If there are members of the band that just don't want to tour, like they don't well, want to leave. They don't want to play anymore. They got fat. They lost their hair. They don't want to get on stage anymore. They're done. So you need a replacement.
Yeah,
but well, when you've got a band that there's two versions out there and you could put them back together, I think that's what you need to do. Figure it out.
Well, I agree. And if you're not going to do that, there's no crime in ending the band. There's yeah. certainly no crime in saying, okay, Judas Priest, which has been around for 50 years, is no longer a band. That, you know, that would be the respectable way to go out. Rob Halford and Scott Travis could probably put a band together with a different guitar player or two and a bass player or have Ian Hill, but just call it Halford.
Right.
They'd make the same money. If there's no other band active with active members that's out there playing it, and I know people automatically say, well, what about KK's Priest? KK's Priest doesn't count. Love Ripper, love KK. That doesn't count. Right. That feels like a cover band. To me, doesn't it to you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know,
it doesn't feel like, well, it's an extension of Priest. It feels like a cover band. And I'm sure it'll be good. But, dude, it's fine for them to just say Priest is done. We can't even get our replacement players to play the gigs. So it's time to end. It's just right now, it's just time for this to end.
I know Halford attempted some Halford albums over the years. Did he miss a opportunity to kind of be that Aussie kind of figure, you know, to just where he could go out with the band, play the Judas Priest hits, but also have his own records too?
Absolutely. Because he has four, if I'm thinking right, he has four total solos, two of which are awesome. Crucible and Resurrection. Maiden Metal, you know, it had the mower on it, which that was pretty lame. But and then he had Winter Songs, like a Christmas type thing. But and if you saw, I saw Crucible tour and I saw Resurrection tour. I'm a huge, huge Priest guy.
Right.
And he was just playing Priest songs. He was playing Priest songs and he was playing three, four, five of his songs off of whichever, you know, solo records. And it was good. It was absolutely, I think he was probably a little too old to do the full Ozzy crossover. He would have always right. kind of had to backload it with Judas Priest material, but they're his songs anyway, so why wouldn't he? And right. In the end, just the fact that people are out there seeing it with Faulkner and Sneap proves that people will see it with anybody playing it, as long as it sounds good. As long as it's the joke we always tell is as long as you got the guitar player and the vocalist, you're good. You know, if you had a good guitar player and you got the vocalist, and Rob Halford is, even though he's not an original guy, most people, when you ask him, name a guy in Judas Priest, he's the first guy people name.
Right.
So, yeah, I think Halford did miss his mark. I think he could have been a solo guy, but, you know, he chose to go back. And I will say this, that he's put out four albums since he's been back, and they're not as good as the four solo albums. None of them are. They're good. Firepower was pretty darn good. Whatever the one is with March of the Damned on it, the Redeemer of Souls, that was sounded like it was recorded in a box, but it was a bunch of decent songs.
Right.
The Angel Retribution was lame, I thought, and Nostradamus was clearly lame. So he's done better work solo. So I think you're right. He did miss his Ozzy moment.
Right. Well, my final thoughts on it, though, just, you know, KK out there still playing, still writing music, still doing great. I mean, I enjoyed the KK's Priest record, and he wants back in the band. You've obviously got an opening. Obviously, you know, Richie would have to learn Tipton's parts, because you would have two KKs in the band. Mm-hmm. But but other than that, man, I get him back in the band, figure it out. It's 50 years. Make it happen.
At least for that tour. You know, yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, it would give it some credibility. I still don't love it, you know, and I don't love having a clearly sick Glenn Tipton stagger out on stage and right. play one song. I hate that. It just reminds you that he's sick. It doesn't remind you of the glory days at all, you know, right. but it would give some credibility, I guess. I don't know. To me as a fan, I would have no problem if they said tour's canceled, we're retiring. Watch right. for a Halford EP in 3 months or whatever. That would be, that to me would be the better solution than what they're doing.
I agree. And in a true Talk to Me fashion, since we're all over the board today, we're going to go from some Judas Priest talk into my talk with Jelly Roll. Nice. So all the Jelly Roll fans are like, Judas Priest, you know, what the hell's going on? Nice. But guys, check out my interview with Jelly Roll. And then Chris and I will be back to break down Jelly's Mount Rushmore of underground hip hop. Moguls, I guess. I guess that's what you call it. But let's talk to Jelly Roll, and Chris and I will be back momentarily.
Somebody save me. Me from myself. Has been so long living in hell. They say my life. Drinking and smoking is hopeless, but feel like it's all that I need. Something inside of me's broken. I hold on to anything that sets me free. I'm a lost cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. Life is shattered. My hopes and my dreams. I'm a lost cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. Life is shattered. My hopes and my dreams.
All right, guys, let's welcome the pride of Nashville, Tennessee himself, Jelly Roll, to talk to me here, notfest.com. Jelly, man, how you doing?
Man, I'm incredible, man. It's I know you're from here, so I don't know if y'all have, I heard of Kentucky got it too, but it's like 8 inches of snow out here right now.
Yeah, I know. It's that's like, crazy. I've been seeing the pictures.
It's like insane snow for the South. So it's cool, man. We're excited, though. It's good.
Well, at least you got good that day. Big truck, man. You got to get that out there in the snow.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely not going to have a problem moving around. The problem is, you know how it is down here. You know how it is down here in the South. The problem I'm having now is everywhere else is closed.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, I'm totally in. I'm ready to roll, but fuck, I think Waffle House is open, which is awesome. I'll go there, but that's about it.
Well, you know, you've had your past issues with the Waffle House, man. So do you still frequent the Waffle House?
I'm still a Waffle House loyalist.
So good.
It's too good not to go, man. It's the best drunk food and hangover food ever. So if you go there drunk at 3 a.m, I just order whatever I order to eat then and get one to go, and I'll eat that in the morning.
Well, speaking of that, man, we'll start with how's your health doing, man? How's the weight loss going? You've been posting some great videos.
It's good. I'm down like 20-something pounds since I got off tour 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago now. I'm doing about 5 to 7 pounds a week, and I feel great. I feel good. You know, I had my roughest week last week on week 3.
Yeah.
But just a body change, man. I've cut back the drinking immensely and obviously cut a bunch of crazy stuff out of my diet. And,
right.
You know, most people, you would never know their addiction unless they were forthcoming about it, where I wear mine.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you ask, like, you look at most people in the grocery store and I wonder what that guy's toughest battle is in his life, you know, but you'd never know. Where me, I wear my toughest battle in my life. So it's obvious what I struggle with the most, you know, but it's good. I'm excited about it. I'm off tour until April 1st. So I plan to lose 100 pounds between then.
Yeah, I saw you. I saw as soon as you said that, I was watching one of your Facebook lives or whatnot, and people were going nuts about how that might be too much weight too fast. But as long as you don't health, you know, being healthy about it, I guess we're good.
The problem is when you're my size and you actually make the life change to quit eating certain foods.
Yeah,
like cutting processed sugars out as much as possible, and cutting out unnecessary processed carbohydrates, and trying to focus just on actual food. Dude, you know how much chicken and rice and vegetables I'd have to eat a day to stay this fat?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like I'm losing the weight. I'm not trying to lose that weight that fast. It's just by, you know, you're dealing with a different thing. If I was 190 pounds trying to lose 30 pounds, it'd be more of a struggle. You know, I'd pound a week maybe, but dude, when you're this fat, this shit just, I can't keep it from falling off. You know what I mean?
You know, yours and my path crossed a few years ago, Louder Than Life. I was doing press there. I didn't know much about you at the time, and I'm kind of bummed that I didn't back then. But you are still legendary in that press tent for the fact that you did a shot with everybody in there right before you did the interview, man. I've never seen that since, and I never saw it before, man. So it was crazy.
Then we still do it every festival we go to every time. It's kind of our tradition. So my goal is to go get the press tent fucked up every time I do it. We never turn down a chance to talk to people, and it's always fun, man. It's just getting bigger and better and more fun. I look forward to COVID, obviously. I hate even talking about this shit, but it has ruined the press world for us. We got to do a little bit at Rocklahoma, thankfully.
Yeah.
But there was nothing going on down at Rockville. So.
Now, which was the festival you did Simple Man with Shinedown?
That was Blue Ridge.
Okay.
You know, it was the Blue Ridge Rock Festival. And if I remember right, I don't think they did press neither that day.
Yeah. Dude, that
very, very, very interesting. Sorry.
The video of that, you know, that you released or whatever of the performance, man, I don't know you but I know where you're from. I know you're from Antioch. I know the town, you know, I worked at Hickory Hollow Mall for God's sakes, you know,
yes, like, the old mall. It's a skate rink now, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. So, I mean, like, I know, you know, the area you came from and everything. So, and I'm a sentimental person and love that I grew up in Nashville, you know, love I grew up in the area. So when I see somebody succeeding, it like, I was watching your Grand Ole Opry thing today. And when you got choked up on stage, I got choked up watching. I'm like, what am I doing here? I'm a 40-year-old man watching this stuff.
Yeah, it's sure. Awesome. I get choked up talking about it.
Yeah.
It was, it's kind of like I said this, and they're doing a whole piece coming out later this month from the Grand Ole Opry. And it's like when you represent the culture in which I'm from and you're familiar growing up in a single bedroom apartment in Hendersonville and, you know, about that culture and that part of America and you've rode through these extremely diverse lower class, middle class communities. And it just feels different. Some of the things we're doing, you know, it's like I was thinking about it. Like I played the Ryman, the Grand Ole Opry, the Tootsie's Birthday Bash, Rocklahoma, Rockville, and Blue Ridge in the same year. And it's like, if you do it a year to date, I will play Tortuga in March. And last week of March, which is like, you know, top three biggest country music festivals. It's just so surreal as a local kid, especially to be so accepted in so many different places and still stay true to who I am, where I'm from, and the sound that I bring to the table. That's what's fucking cool about this.
So you said that there's going to be a documentary or whatnot that they're putting out, but I mean, how did the Grand Ole Opry approach you? Was there somebody like that on the know over there that knew who you were and was, you know, hip to the fact that, you know, they could bring somebody cool like you in?
Yeah, no.
And that sounded so white, by the way.
No, but it's so real.
Yeah.
It's I had gotten really lucky that there's so many people to thank in this, and I'm super high right now, so I'm gonna forget names, which sucks so bad because I fucking know these people for real. But I had signed a partnership with a company called BMG last year, right? And it's the first time I partnered with a label, but I maintain my independence. It's a great deal. I'm not allowed to speak about it in great detail, but it's pretty much a, I don't want to say distributor because I don't think I'm allowed to give any detail, but I signed a partnership with BMG.
Okay.
Broken Bow Records out of Nashville, subsidiary of BMG. A guy named Jonathan Loba, who is famous in Nashville, Tennessee for taking acts that people don't know what to do with and absolutely putting them in places they shouldn't be. And I knew this about his story. So I was like, example, I don't know how much country music you listen to, but he got Parmalee and Blanco Brown, a number one song with Just the Way. And Blanco Brown's famous for that Get Up song, Put Your Hair Down. That big viral record a few years ago. The big song, My Boy, on TikTok last year. You know what I mean? He ain't my son. It ain't my I missed the ball game. Yeah.
You know what's funny? And I'll a quick story on that. I have a stepdaughter, and she sent me that video, and she's like, I'm crying right now because this is how I feel about you. And it was like,
I bet you cried.
And I'm like in the kitchen first thing in the morning. And I'm just like, because, you know, it's not, I don't get a ton of texts from her early in the morning. And right. I'm in the morning, make a breakfast or whatnot. And I'm just like in tears.
No, for sure. Cause it's like saying everything you want to hear. Yeah. Right? But, right. LV Shane is the guy who wrote that record and performed it. He's a Kentucky boy. Incredible guy. So I knew Loba's history with these people. And when Loba sat down, he said, what do you even want to partner with somebody for? You're going to stay independent with us, but you've been so independent. I've been like TuneCore independent. Right. You know, he was like, why would you even want to partner? I said, well, Loba, you can maybe take me places I can't take myself. He's like, where? I was like, I want to play the Grand Ole Opry. You know, he was like, what? I was like, yeah, man, I want to play the Grand Ole Opry. You know what I mean? I was like, I want to do these things because I feel like I'm so ingrained in the country culture and I'm so from Nashville, Tennessee that even though people would think I wouldn't belong there, I do. You know, right. And he was like, I think you do. He said, we'll do it. And we signed a deal and he was like, it's going to take me a year to figure out the Opry thing. 3 months. He pitched me to the Opry. Scott Bailey, who runs the thing over there. Me forgetting my dude's name right now is going to break my heart forever. I hope you don't see this clip, but my other dude who runs it in Gen, just like, it was serendipitous. My dude who runs it was at a backyard with his neighbor one day, smoking a cigar, having a whiskey or something. And the neighbor was like, have you heard of the Jelly Roll kid from around here? So it was like, when I got pitched to him, he was like, what an organic way to already hear about me. You know what I mean? Like the best way. You hope that people in the music business don't hear about you from people in the music business.
Right.
You know, you hope that somebody's like, hey, man, you should check, like, just somebody who's not associated with it. But they was totally into it, and they signed us up quick. So it was surreal, man. It was a dream come true in every facet. And I think I'll be playing it again. So I think the good news is now that I'm in, I'll be able to play it. I told them, as much as they invite me, I'm showing up. So.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than posting about, you know, hey, what? Tell me some new bands you guys are into, and people post their own band, and I'm like, right. I'm not going to listen to that one, but if there's someone that I know says, hey, check out this band, you know, I'm going to check it out.
It's such a different feel. The word of mouth is still real.
Yeah,
it's the one thing that the internet didn't lose. In fact, the internet amplified it. You know, where people now post about it, and if you're really friends with somebody and they post about it. And they post about it a couple times. Eventually, you might hit them up yourself and go, who is this guy you keep posting? Oh, dude, you got to check this guy out. This dude's incredible. I still find music from people calling me or people playing music. My wife plays like all kind of like weird underground rock music all the time. Once a day, the Alexa in the kitchen makes me go, who is this?
Right.
And Bunny's like, oh, this is such and such, you know. And I found so many good bands like that. Star Set. Black Veil Brides, you know what I mean? I found so many good bands from somebody around me playing them. And me being like, who in the fuck is that? That's super sick.
I was watching an interview with you earlier today, and you were talking about when you married your wife, you guys had just been to a Deftones concert. And I told my wife that, and I was like, you know, Deftones will do that to you, man. You're either going to get laid or get married after a show. For sure.
It happened. The Deftones show was awesome, dude.
you know, Save Me is I wrote down here a perfect song. It's so like it just hits you right there. You know, it, every time I listen to it, it's just like it. I hear the pain in your voice, and it's just a real song, man. And a lot of, you know, auto tune and all that stuff will take all that away. And just hearing your voice singing those words, just, man, it's just every time I hear it's a perfect Sunday morning song. It's so good.
Yeah, to me, it checked all the boxes. My number one goal when I write music, and not to sound corny or cliche, is I want to evoke an emotion. It's important to me that music is felt and not just heard. That is so imperative to what I try to push as an individual. Every time I write a song, I start with why.
Yeah.
And I go, why should this song exist? And if I can't come up with a real reason, if it's because it's catchy, I won't put the song out. If the only reason I can come up with is, man, it's catchy as shit, you know, it's not worth putting out for me. Will it make somebody laugh? Will it make somebody cry? Can it help somebody internalize something? Can it help somebody express themselves? Can it make somebody dance? Is it music somebody can work out to? There just has to be a reason why the music exists, at least for me. And it can't be because it's hooky.
Right.
You know, oh, it's real catchy. You know, it's like, I'm not, so is fucking Baby Shark. You know what I'm saying? Baby Shark's catchy as fuck.
Hey, that's a jam.
Know? Yeah, it's that fucking slap, right? You know, but it's like, I don't want to fucking put out Baby Shark.
In listening to your story, you know, going to jail and the drugs and everything else, and I feel like that I hear that story a lot, but there's a different outcome. You know, you are the exception to the rule when it's like, I went to jail. I was like, you know, when I get out, I'm going to focus on music and I'm going to hit it hard. And you're like, you're living in a movie, like the life that you're living right now, if it was made into a movie, a lot of people probably wouldn't believe because of the opportunities you're getting right now.
Oh, dude, it's absolutely insane. And never compromise the integrity of the sound.
Yeah.
I think that was the most important part too, is like, I wanted to continue to do it and I wanted to be true to who I was and who I feel like I make music for. I tell people all the time, look, man, I might not be for you. That's fine. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I'm a shot of whiskey. I might not be your guy, but I know who my people are.
Yeah.
I'm never surprised when somebody's like, love your music, and I see them at a grocery store. 9 out of 10 times, I'll see somebody who knows my music before they'll see me.
Right.
I'll look over, they'll be doing something. I'll be like, oh, if that dude doesn't know who I am, I need to go introduce myself. Because I can just see it in him that I'm his guy and he don't know it. You know what I mean? I know who I'm speaking to. And I think that's something that a lot of artists lose in translation in the journey too, is that they don't know who the fuck they're talking to, man. They're just in there trying to write songs that are catchy.
Right. After your, you know, the Opry performance, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of older people there and they see you walk out on stage. I kind of wondered, like, do you remember the facial expressions you saw? And then, like, did you see those facial expressions change while you were, you know, performing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%. Son of a Sinner I did first. And I could tell people liked it, but I could tell I didn't bring them all the way in yet. And a lot of it was because Son of a Sinner really showcases my voice too. But I didn't nail it that time, frankly, because I was so emotional. You know, it's hard to sing and cry, dude. I mean, I was fighting back tears the whole first until I settled into the show, you know. And when I went in to Save Me, it's like I felt the room open up. You know, I just watched. And I was lucky that. One thing that I've been blessed about is I don't have the biggest fan base in the world, but we are Sparta. Yeah. It is the mighty 300. You know what I mean? They're going to show up anywhere and support what I do anytime. There was, lucky for me, there was a Jelly Roll presence there anyways. So there was already a feeling of like, you know, it's kind of this thing. There's got to be this old person at some point in time that looks over two rows down and sees a guy that looks like he's never been there before that's crying too and go, I don't know what the fuck this connection is between the guy on stage and this guy, but maybe I should listen.
Yeah.
And you could tell, man, that, you know, my favorite thing at the end of it is when Miss Conley goes, for those listening around the world, because it's a radio show, yeah, keep that in mind, the Opry House is on its feet, standing ovation for the debut of Jelly Roll. I quote that exactly what he said, and I haven't heard it since until I watched the video the other day where they, you know, but I haven't heard it since. I just remember walking off stage and that his words and the tone of his voice just ringing in my ear the moment he paused. You know what I mean? It was just bone chilling to be like, dude, we did it. You know, we're doing things that wasn't supposed to be done. Shit that people literally said, everybody's got to, they said, I'd never do this story. I mean, literally people told, like, it was, if you know the Grand Ole Opry, to know that Jelly Roll played it is fucking as absurd as the 8 inches of snow in Nashville right now.
Well, that, you know, I think that's why when I saw that you did it, I was like, oh my God, like that's the connection there is insane, because, you know, I grew up in Nashville playing in, you know, metal bands and playing all the clubs downtown and things like that. And there was obviously no way we were ever going to play the Grand Ole Opry. Our guitar player did because his dad is a country musician, but like, that's just not an attainable goal for a lot of people, but you know, you figured it out, man. That's pretty insane.
No, it's insane. Speaking of like the metal roots, first of all, I'm sure you played the End.
Yes.
Yeah. End and Exit. God, I love those places. My drummer is Cody Ash, and he played with Siler for years, which is a heavy band. And Casey, who was my drummer but now guitar player, is just a metal. That's all. He's a metalhead. That's all he listens to. I love the Titan Cup, baby.
Titan Cup, Titan license plate, hat.
and Jack Fowler, obviously my other guitar player, is from Sleeping with Sirens.
Oh, nice. Wow.
So I got lucky that I got to bring two players, and Jack was out of town, so I brought Casey and Cody. And it was just, I looked behind me, and here's like a double pedal drumming motherfucker behind me at the Grand Ole Opry. You know, I looked to the right, and a kid who's never listened to country or hip hop hardly is standing over here. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, this is it. Like, we've arrived.
And you're definitely doing the, you know, I hate to say the, use the word crossover, but I mean, you're obviously playing the metal festivals. I mean, you're on a, you know, Slipknot format right now, and you know, things like that. So I mean, you know, you're crossing over into all these different worlds that, you know, I don't know when you came out of jail, if you know realized you were going to.
I'd hope so. Yeah. You know, I'd always prayed, so I just wasn't sure how I'd be received everywhere, because I believe that what we do is rock and roll. Side note, we have a song that's in the top 30 of rock radio right now.
Yeah.
Dead Man Walking. So we're playing huge on Octane right now. Never with the intention of doing it was kind of what I love about the story. You know, it's like, I feel like we embody not only the sound of rock and roll, but the spirit above everything. Mm-hmm. And I was super drunk in an interview once and created a kerfuffle whenever I was like, dude, we're fucking here. Fucking everybody's fucking loaded. We're all fucked up. We're having the time of our life down here at Rockville. You can't tell me the same spirit of rock and roll. And of course, Straight Edge Johnny is like, that's rock and roll. I don't want to be a part of it. It's like, come on, dog. We're not doing nothing that Motley Crue didn't do.
Right.
Except for heroin. You know what I'm saying? How about that? In fact, we aren't doing everything they did. But it wasn't about the drug usage to me as the rebellious spirit. And I think that's what got lost in that message was. It's more of like, we were probably the only person to light a joint on stage that day at Rockville. You know, it's like, just who cares? They don't invite me back.
You didn't pee on anybody, so.
No. I just I couldn't fuck that up when I played the same stage. And when I talked to the stage manager, I was like, yo, we're gonna keep it PG-13. He said, there's nothing you can do that's worse than what already happened. He's like, the bar is so high, you'll never reach it. But
you didn't slip in it or anything?
Yeah, no, thank God it had been cleaned up. Yeah. But I just feel like it's the spirit of rock and roll. Yeah. I also feel like we embody the spirit of hip hop. We release a lot of records like hip hop guys. We tour like rock and roll bands. We write songs like country music dudes. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm from that generation. You're from there too. We're from the last generation of kids who were like, I don't know, dude. I don't want to show my age here, but LimeWire.
Right.
And Frostwire and Napster existed whenever I was coming up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know what we used to do? We would just go in on a Monday and just download every song that started with an A. You know what I mean? Right. You know, like every song that started with an A.
Mm-hmm.
So we would listen to everything from Always Beautiful to A Lonely Night. You know what I mean? Like we would just, the music was spread everywhere. it wasn't like it used to, you know, before that it was the tape cassette days and you'd like go to one radio station and just put a record your favorite songs on your cassette. You know, we were part of the next generation up where we just downloaded everything. I was lucky enough. I caught the transition of the cassette tape. There was an era when I was 10 where I was recording my little songs on my cassette, but I went straight into the internet era after that.
Yeah, I'm 42. I know how old you are. We're going to talk about it, but you know, I'm a few years older than you, but yeah, there's definitely that transition of I remember the first time that we ever downloaded an entire album before it came out. It was actually Deftones, which is actually, you know, bring it back to that, but it was definitely a crazy world, man, where, you know, a buddy of mine had a T1 connection and we thought it was the fastest thing in the world because we could download an album in an entire day.
Right. Yeah. It was like super speed, right? You're like, we get this whole record. It'll be done by tomorrow. Right. You just let the computer sit.
If you leave it before you go to school. Era. Yeah.
Yeah. You come back and at least you could hear the first 5 or 6, 7 songs, the rest after the night. No, I was from that era. We just download every song we could find anywhere. You know, it's just whatever. Which it was the beginning of the consumption of music era is what I call it. We just didn't have a way to take it portable back then. Which has really changed everything now. So what still blows my mind about this era is my wife will be in the kitchen listening to something. My daughter will be upstairs listening to something. And I'll be in the game room listening to something. But, you know, it's four different. Back in the day, you had one CD player in the house. Right. And you played one CD and you carried it back to the car because you couldn't afford two. Right. I'm saying, you know, it's like. That's how that works. You know, if you were really balling, if you bought two of the same CD, one for the house and one for the car.
Oh, man. Especially back then, because by the end of CDs, by the big boom of it all, I mean, they were $18, $19 a piece, man. Where, you know.
Oh, if you wanted the deluxe package, because I used to love the artwork and the dog, we're talking about $25.
Right.
You know, yeah, you're like, well, I want the one with the extra pamphlet pages or with the cool hologram graphic or whatever it was, you know.
Or this one comes with totally a DVD.
A of that era. Oh, God. Yeah. Yo, you had to. Couldn't miss it. I do miss that. I do miss artist documentaries.
Yes.
They're not like they. And what's crazy is they're so much easier to shoot and do now.
Yeah.
But I think it gets overlooked. But it's like, I do miss that era. That's something I love about Mushroom Head. They still religiously are like DVD with everything. They don't put it on the internet. If you want to see it, this is how you got to see it.
Hey, anytime Skinny from Mushroom Heads on the show, always great download numbers on that one, too.
Yeah, Skinny's the man.
You know
my Skinny story, right? My first nationwide tour I ever went on.
Oh, go ahead.
With ICP and Mushroom Head.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so nobody was, you know, I was like one of four.
Right.
I was one of five. It was me, Mad Child, 3-6 Mafia, Mushroom Head, ICP. Wow. So I went on every night while people were walking in, right? And when you're playing like 2,000 cap rooms, 1,000 cap rooms, you could guess every night that my green room was my van.
Right.
Right. So like night number four, they held doors for some kind of like production setup reason. And I literally ended up going on. Like, as there was like 12 people in the crowd, I came off stage fighting mad. I got to arguing with the production manager from ICP or whatever. You know, I was just young and pissed off. And I was fucking outside the van. It was scorching hot. And I was fucking infuriated. And Skinny and J-Man's coming off the bus. He's like, yo, why don't you get on the bus and cool down for a second? We never even met each other.
Right.
I didn't know anything about him. And from that day forward, I had their bus code. It was like my green room. They'd be like, or they'd let me have their green room because they had the bus. And it just couldn't have been a cooler. They were just so nice. And not to say that everybody else on the tour wasn't. ICP was sweethearts. Me, Joe Bruce, and Joey are still cool to this day. I'm still friends with everybody from the tour for the most part. But they were the only ones that was genuinely like, hey, man, we know what it's like to be the dude in the van that blew a tire yesterday and showed up late today.
Right.
Hop on the bus, you know. Or if it was a really long ride, they'd be like, why don't you just sleep on the couch of the bus or something. They were just I'll never say anything but incredible things about. This is 10 years ago, by the way.
Right.
incredible things about them dudes, man.
I saw ICP at the Municipal Auditorium back in like 98-ish, you know, back on the Great Malenko era, you know.
That's what I thought. Was that the Great Malenko tour? Because it came out in 97, right?
Yeah, that would have been. I saw them at 328, and then they came back through and they did Municipal.
Yeah.
So
God, what a moment that people forget just how big of a moment that was. It was in fucking insane what they were doing.
And I don't know if it was, and in Municipal Auditorium, it's a giant, you know, about 10,000 seater, and they're just shooting those things just all over the place, and I couldn't imagine the cleanup crew on a ICP tour, man.
Yeah, they finally got hip. I think back in those days, they wasn't even hip to using diet soda yet.
Yeah,
because you know they did that later. They were telling me a story on tour where they just shoot like regular soda, and it would leave everybody sticky. And the floor sticky because of the sugar. And they found out the diet soda doesn't do it. So they started using the diet thing.
I like that. So going on tour with ICP, you know, back then, kind of seeing how they work and their business model. And, you know, the merch stand looks like a Hot Topic exploded. And, you know, they sell everything from, you know, skate decks and shirts and jerseys and everything else. I mean, you just see that kind of rolling business that they have, man. Did you take anything from that?
Yeah, for sure. But I had already been hip to that stuff anyways, because when I was incarcerated, that interview had came out with Travis O'Gwynn and Tech N9ne.
Okay.
And I remember looking at them on this crane overlooking this warehouse, which I've been to that warehouse now 1,000 times, and thinking to myself, what the fuck is going on? Right. Like, I remember at that moment in my life, when I was flipping through, and I told Travis O'Gwynn this story. We're friends to this day, thank God. Love Travis. And I'm flipping through this magazine, and never, you know, we got it every month in jail or whatever. And I never was like, I want to be like that guy. Until I opened up that spread. There was that 2-page spread. And I remember thinking, I want to be that guy. And I didn't know that Travis, until I read the article, wasn't a rapper. You know, I didn't understand their dynamic, but I was like, I want to be that guy.
Right.
And then I read the article and was like, oh, fuck. Okay, this is cool. You know, and I've always kind of modeled myself after that. Is that how could, in a perfect world, you be half Tech N9ne and half Travis O'Gwynn? You know, how could you be smart enough to, not to say Tech isn't, but Tech really focuses on the artistry there and Travis focuses on the business. I was like, how do you make that happen? And then when you see ICP rolling, you're like, oh, okay, no, this is a thing. Like, people do this, you know. And it's been fun watching Yellow Wolf build Slumerican hands-on and up front, having a front row seat to watch that brand build. And Yellow Wolf's dream was always to have a brand bigger than him, and it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think kids wear Slumerican clothes now that probably don't even listen to Yellow Wolf.
Right.
It's just a cool brand, you know, and I think that's awesome.
Did Yellow Wolf kind of doing the crossover stuff? Did you see that and maybe kind of want to try your hand at that too? You know, kind of going from the rap to the kind of country rock stuff that he was doing there.
I think that it was kind of, we were all going that direction anyways. Yellow Wolf was just on a national platform because of Interscope. I'd already been putting out Sunday Morning at that point, and I'd already put out records that were in the vein of that spirit, you know. Yeah. I just think Yellow Wolf was the most, he was with Interscope, Shady. Right. He got placed on the final episode of the final season of what's probably one of the top three greatest TV shows ever in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy.
So everything just was a perfect storm, and getting to sit front row was definitely inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, would it have changed the course of what we were doing had he flopped? Probably.
Right.
You know, had he went out there and fell on his fucking face, I think, yeah, we would have all. I'm not just saying me. I mean, I think, you know, Struggle, I think Upchurch, I think there's a whole group of us that when we've seen it completely go, it's like, okay, no, this is acceptable. But I was already playing Rock on the Range. I was already had a live band on tour. All that stuff came. I'd had this vision early.
Right.
I just always had a dream to, I wanted to release music like a hip hop guy and tour like a rock and roll band. That was always my vision. Only gripe I have with rock music is the guys whose album cycles are every 4 years, like it's fucking 94.
Right.
You know, I struggle with that. It's like, I just personally, I want to put out a bunch of music.
Right.
That's what I want to do. I want to drop. I write too many songs not to. I just want to put them out, let them live. So that was kind of my approach from day one. So we were already rocking full band. We was already on all that shit. That's something I think that just kind of happened organically. Being from Nashville, and you'll get this. You get off the plane, and the first picture you see on the wall is a fucking guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody with a guitar on his back. Or you walk through the airport, and somebody's playing live music in the guitar. You're playing a guitar acoustic, singing songs right there in the airport. It's just, you throw a rock, and you can hit a guy who can shred.
Right.
It's just it was by default that it was going to end up happening in my world one way or the other. You know, it's just, I think guys like me and you were more rebellious of the era because we grew up when Nashville was small.
Right.
So it was more of a like spiteful thing for like you to end up in metal and me to end up in hip hop was more like, we're not going to do that shit everybody does downtown. Like those dudes aren't even from here.
Right.
I tell people to this day, the fastest way I spot a tourist is if he's wearing a cowboy hat. I see you with a cowboy hat. I know you're fucking not from here. It's an immediate thing. I see you with a baseball cap. You're from here, Georgia. But if I see you with a cowboy hat, you're not fucking from here.
Yeah, it's funny growing up there, and like Broadway for a long time was a place you did not go. Like you did not go down to Broadway. A buddy of mine while we were in high school went down to, there was porn shops down there, and he met Ron Jeremy at like a porn shop on Broadway. And now it looks like a, neon circus down there.
Oh, it's insane. All named after the latest country music stars. It's, when we used to go there, we'd sneak through the garage of the Hilton mm-hmm. and through the back door of Rippy's, me and BT. We had a friend that was a cook there, and we'd go grab a sandwich on Wednesday nights before we went to the cantina for Cypher night. That was every Wednesday was Cypher night at the cantina in Cummins Station.
So crazy. Yeah, just seeing the town. I mean, obviously you've seen it grow, blow up too, man. It's like every time I go back, which I go back a lot. We go back, my dad still lives out in Gallatin, things like that. So I mean, we go down there a lot to see shows and things, and just to watch that city grow is insane.
No, it's a totally different town than the one you and I grew up in.
Right.
I tell people all the time, I love what it's done for our economy. I hate what it's done to our traffic.
Right.
I wish these motherfuckers would go home. I wish they would make a lane for people from New York and LA so they'd stay the fuck out of my way. I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm never, you can stay out of my way. I know I'm not waiting until I get up here and see the sign. I know where the fuck I'm going. Move out of the fucking way, dude.
All right, man. As we kind of, wrap up, we're almost about 45 minutes in, but I don't get a lot of chance to talk to Titans fans on the podcast, and being, I think I might be the only Titans fan in metal media at least. So I mean, I got to talk to you about something, man. So, I opened up the phone yesterday, Derrick Henry's coming back.
Yes.
Number one seed in the AFC on the line, man. I think signs are looking good for us this year, man.
Dude, I think we're dual threatened too. I think Foreman did a great job.
He did great, man.
I thought he was great. Derek coming. I told somebody Foreman had 100-something yards against Miami the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if we'd had Derek there. Taylor's in great shape right now. Saffold's coming back from a shoulder injury. He'll play a little bit this week, but I think he'll be ready for the playoffs. So that left side of the line is going to be stacked. Veterans. I think we got a good thing going this year. I think what deserves the most acknowledgement is what our defense has done.
Oh, absolutely.
Kevin Byard has brought that defense together. Big mm-hmm. Jeffrey Simmons has led that line. Kevin Byard, there's been so many pieces of the puzzle. They've started playing like a team. Watching Armani Hooker come around the way he's been coming around has been absolutely insane. Just watching our defense become what it is. I think bringing Julio was important because it took just enough attention off AJ for AJ to get open again.
Yeah.
And I knew that's what we needed. Especially when we lost Davis. Mm-hmm. So that was my fear. We needed that dual threat. And I don't know another team in the league. Now, the Packers look great. I think they're a shoe-in for the NFC, right? I'd like to see somebody, take them out, but I don't know if I see anybody over there able to do it. But I don't know another team besides the Packers who has the triple threat we do.
I agree with you, man.
He can scramble. He can move. He can pass. We got a couple receivers that he can get to. And if all else fails, Derrick Henry can pound the ball. I just think this is our year, man. I think this is our year. I'm a little worried about going back around to the Patriots, just hoping they didn't make us gun shy, you know. But I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, what was the crazy Colts about the Patriots?
Dark horse.
Yeah. I think we're just, you know, like, what is that? Just beaten down by the Colts over the years. Like no matter how bad they are, they still, like, you know, we still fear them no matter what.
No, it's always going to be our fight every year. I think the Kansas City Chiefs not looking as dominant as they have before. They look good. And they're still high seed, but I think that I'm not as fearful of them as I normally am, which is incredible. Yeah. I think we got a good shot this year, man. I feel good about it. I love that we clinched the South. Mm-hmm. I love that we're the number one seed in the whole division. I just think it's great. I think we don't need to fuck it off with the Texans. I think we need to make sure we slide through.
That would be a very Titans thing to do, is to go to Houston and get beat and then be like the 100%. Three seed.
To this day, the only team I think that should have beat us all year was Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think they just had our number. It was the first game of the season. Taylor hadn't took a snap, you know. Mm-hmm. Imagine being Taylor Lewan. And I always favor Taylor because, you know, he's a franchise guy and a friend. But imagine being Taylor, you're coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. Your first week back on the field, they line you up across the street from fucking Chandler.
Yeah. It was crazy.
I love that Taylor owned it and came right back stronger than ever. He was just like, what do you want me to say? I got beat. You know, I just got beat to the punch. But I don't know. I won't get beat again. And he hadn't got beat again on that field this year. I think we look better than we've ever looked.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together at the perfect time. Normally, you know, you got to – I thought we peaked early, but I think we're kind of went in a lull, and I think we might be coming back around again, man. I'm looking forward to it. On that note, you know, busting with the boys, man. Tell me, how did that come about? How did they reach out to you and just like, hey, we see what you're doing? You know, what was the connection there?
I think that there was a little bit of a – so Shab was in town doing – not the Fighter and the Kid. He was doing the King and the Sting.
Right.
With Theo.
Yep.
And Theo's living in Nashville. So I went over there and they're like, come do the anniversary thing with Hannah Barron and we're going to do this thing. Why don't you come sit in the Culture Corner? And I came over and I did the podcast with them. And when Shab was leaving, he was out front Ubering. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm finna Uber to go do Bustin' with the Boys. I was like, oh my God, I'm a huge fan.
Right.
You know, fucking, I love Taylor Lewan. I was like, obviously, as a Titan guy, just, you know, big Taylor fan. And my daughter had a Taylor Lewan shirt before I met Taylor, the jersey. And I was like, let me give you a ride over there. I want to meet him anyways. And I don't know what you know about Brennan Schaub, but I know the internet sometimes pokes at him because that's kind of his thing, you know. He is the best dude on earth. He is what I call a connector. I don't know if you've ever read The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell.
But they have a thing
there about people that are called that are connectors. Their whole thing in life is just put people together.
Right.
That is the epitome of who Brennan Schaub is. He didn't bat his eye. He's like, yeah, man, you should meet him anyways. He's like, come on, let's go. Let's go right now. Takes me in, brings me on the bus, introduced me. Taylor was familiar. Will was familiar. We instantly kind of hit it off. Ernest, a good friend of mine who's biggest songwriter in Nashville right now, who's from Nashville, local boy like us, went to Belmont. Lipscomb. Sorry, he'd hit me right now. Went to Lipscomb. He's not a Lipscomb boy.
You might start a fight with that one, getting that wrong.
I was sitting here, sorry, I got to quit getting blowed before I do these things. But he went to Lipscomb, and I hit Ernest too, like, yo, put in a word for me. So they already heard from me from Ernest. And I went in, they were like, you got to come on the bus, man, let's set it up. And dude, I've been on like four times now. Like, that's my boys. Like, that's my dudes. I talk to Will all the time, text Taylor all the time. He's become really good friends of mine. And what's been even cooler, you'll appreciate this as a local guy. The Titans had reached out to me recently about doing this thing they were doing with Rooted. And I went and did this photo shoot with them for an exclusive jacket through the company Rooted. And when I left, they were like, man, we owe you one. I was like, what are you talking about? This is the Titans. Like, you don't owe me. I just came and took a picture with Titan shit on. This is the coolest shit ever. And they'd send me a box this year. Yeah, fuck, I'll pay you.
Right.
And they were like, well, let us bring you to a game and really give you the treatment. I was like, God, I'd be honored. They gave me 10 tickets to the Titan party suite, which is like their hospitality suite.
Yeah.
Gave me 10 field passes for me and the whole band. So we're on the field. 2 days before Christmas, 49ers game.
Oh, wow.
Just what a game, right?
Yeah.
And you want to talk about not to, like, this is not name dropping because this is just my life. No, and it's
drop them all over the place. Yeah.
But we're talking to the Titan players, and a couple of the San Francisco guys come over to the field and say what's up to me, too, which I thought was cool. And then we go back to the suite, and Jeff Jarrett's in there. Me and Jeff Jarrett just partying, which is so cool. You know, Nashville kid, hitting his best. So I'm like, this is like Jeff Jarrett. Yeah, I'm like, this is wild. And then I get a text from BT, the same kid that I used to run through Rippies. And, you know, we've been friends all these years. His dad, Steve Smith, who owns Tootsie's, Rippies, and Broadway, and Kid Rock's Honky Tonk, Kid Rock, texts me and goes, hey, man, Pops is up here. He wants to see you. And Bob said, come over. Right. Lil White's up here. And I'm like, you're kidding me. So we go across to their suite. And next thing you know, I'm getting drunk with Kid Rock and Steve. We're just watching the Titans win the game in 12 seconds. It was just coolest night ever, you know. Just such a Nashville thing for me, you know, to go. And I took a picture with T-Rack on the big thing right in the middle of the field. It was just all kind of cool shit that just happened. You're like, this is happening right here in my hometown. And it's like, we got to tour the Cincinnati Bengals Stadium when we went there, which we thought was awesome. It's always fun. Went by the Brown Stadium, toured it when we were touring there, because I love football, so it'll take you to the locker room and cool stuff like that. But nothing is as cool as doing it in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing. Like playing Tootsie's birthday bash on the middle of Broadway, playing the Ryman Auditorium, like nothing will ever feel like home. Except for Red Rocks. Red Rocks is pretty amazing when you do it, which I'll play next year. I'll headline it for the first time next year. This year.
Wow. Yeah, Red Rocks is a dream destination for most, man. Just as we wrap up, man, what's the – you say you got a tour coming up. The Ballad of the Broken out now. So much good stuff. And the one thing, man, that if you're a new fan getting into Jelly Roll now, there's so much out there for you to watch. Videos, like little vignettes, you know, the you getting your truck on Father's Day and the Grand Ole Opry, and just like you can just sit on YouTube for hours and just hang out with Jelly Roll.
Yeah, we're going to put out a lot more content in the vlog world this year. That's kind of one of my big goals, is to get back into that. We're going to put out a lot of music this year, man. I plan on putting out a rap album, a rock album, and a country album this year. So I just want to do it all. I just want to have fun. My buddy Ryan Upchurch does it like that. He believes in the formula. And I just want to create, man, and release, and hope it helps somebody somewhere along the way. I think that's the beauty of songs like Save Me, is when you get messages that say, save me, save me. You know, you're just like, man, I just want to keep doing that, dude. I want to keep playing festivals. I want to do features this year. I haven't done a lot of features, so I plan on really trying to reach out and do some cool stuff. A lot of stuff I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but I got some big tours lined up. Hopefully, I want to open for people, and I got a couple of cool things going on. Obviously, I got some friends now in the business, and that's been cool, too. Me and Zach Myers and Brent Smith from Shinedown have gotten really close, so I look forward to working with them some this year. It's going to be fun, man. Be a lot of Jelly Roll in the rock world this year. I'll just put it to you that way. You'll see. I think I'm not allowed to say it yet, but I think because of, you know, fuck it, fucking stupid shit. But we're going to play like almost every big festival there is this year on the rock side. So, and probably two or three big country ones.
Yeah, with Brent and, you know, those guys, it's like, you know, Brent is a Knoxville guy. The other guy is a Memphis dude. It's like you guys are.
I'm the guy.
Tri-state, you know, bring it together.
I'm your guy. I'm your Middle Tennessee guy. I'm right in between. I'm the jelly for the sandwich, Bubba. Daddy, you know, that's what I told him. I think that was, I tell everybody, you can work harder than everybody. You can be more talented than everybody. But if you don't have a little bit of luck on your side, it won't work. And I think the luck of Jelly Roll was ironically being from Nashville.
Yeah.
Right. Because, like, even guys like you, I hop straight on with you, and you're like, yo, little known fact, proud to be from there, Titan fan, grew up in Hendersonville. I'm like, holy fuck.
Right.
It's like knowing that Zach's being a Tennessee boy, Brett's a Tennessee boy, Ernest, we were talking about Ernest earlier, a Tennessee boy. You know, you just look at all these connections. It's like, oh, man, this is cool. And for, I guess, being one of the only local people from here, I've been blessed that people acknowledge me as, to some degree, I'm like a staple here now for the locals. Like, if you're really from Nashville, they make memes about me now. You know, you're not from Nashville if you don't know this guy with my picture, you know.
Right.
And I think that's cool. So or if you don't remember this guy passing out mixtapes, you're not from Nashville or something like that. It's just, I see it on like the meme sites. And I'm like, I'm flattered. I'm like, this is cool as fuck.
Well, I'm going to drop this on you. We do a throwback throwdown segment. We normally do a top five, you know, drummer, guitar player, whatnot, but I'll hit you with just maybe a, like a Mount Rushmore of underground artists like Tech Nine, like those guys that you saw doing it. You know, are there four groups, dudes that you could put on Mount Rushmore of kind of the underground hip hop guys that you kind of modeled everything after?
Yeah, Tech Nine is always going to be at the top of that list. Side note, Creature Certified Gold featuring Tech Nine and Chris Calico. Tech Nine to me is big underground and kind of paved the way. ICP, obviously, Twisted, guys like that really were another group of guys that paved the way independently and underground. Not in the old school, but in the new school, I would be remiss if I didn't mention guys like Adam Calhoun and Ryan Upchurch and Tom McDonald, who are just literally independent TuneCore guys who are doing hundreds of millions of streams, billions of streams sometimes a year.
Yeah,
just absolutely crushing their business model. I am just elated into that. I just can't get enough of what they do with that. You know, other guys that have inspired me in other ways. I love, not saying this because this is a Knot Fest thing, but I love the way Corey has been able to do multiple bands and build multiple brands and sounds around different things, and the way they all talk to each other but never talk against each other, which I think's insane to be able to do. I was always kind of inspired by that. What I do is different because it's multi-genre, where his is kind of down the middle rock, either heavy or light. But it was still inspiring when you see people be able to pull that off. Like when I seen Yellow Wolf playing Rock on the Range and Tech Nine playing Knot Fest.
Yeah, I was there for that one.
You're like, oh, okay, no, this is cool. This can work. We can be accepted anywhere as long as the music's good and has a genuine spirit to it. So that's kind of always been my thing. These are guys that just the immediate jump outs that inspire me in different ways.
So at Knot Fest Iowa, Tech Nine comes out to his Chiefs Kingdom, Red Kingdom song, and we're in the middle of Iowa. And there are people with Chiefs flags out there, flying them. What do you got to do you need a Titans song where we're in the middle of Iowa and I need to see some Titans flags, man.
Yeah, I know, dude. Listen, I love it now because I have guys show up in Titans jerseys.
Yeah.
And I'll be on stage and I'll call them. I'm like, I see you back there. That fucking Tannehill jersey is so cool. I'm afraid to even try to do it. I thought about it.
Yeah.
I'm just afraid of fucking it up. And I'm not afraid of much, but I'm like, that organization means so much to me. I'd hate to drop the bomb or drop the ball. Like Red Kingdom is so good. I tell people there's guys like Brent Smith, when I first met him, is what I told him. And this is how I feel about Tech Nine's song Red Kingdom, where some guys inspire you to do something. And then you listen to them again and go, maybe not. I don't think I can do it that good. That's how I feel about whenever they first asked me to come sing with Brent. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. And I'm like, maybe not. Brent Smith is a singing motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, my joke is, probably shouldn't say this, but I'll be honest. Like, I would be okay to sing a duet with Jason Aldean because I think I can. He's a good singer. I'm a good singer, but I think we, you know, he wouldn't blow me out of the water.
Right.
I definitely don't want to sing one with Carrie Underwood.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like there's a moment where you're just like, yeah, I don't think I can sing with you, or like Pink or Demi Lovato or Miley or something. You know, you're like, or Luke Combs. You're like, I don't think I want to do a song with Luke Combs. So it's kind of, I hear Red Kingdom and I'm like, yeah, I don't think I can do that. I think that he did that in such a cool way. I don't know. I'm scared to death of it, so. Plus, I want him to love me. I don't want to turn in a bad song and not get field passes again.
Well, I keep repping the Titans on here. I'm waiting for my field passes, man. I did an interview with Jason Newsted with my Titan stuff up, you know, Metallica podcast. It's, you know, good times. But
why don't you come down to the playoff game with us?
You make that happen. I'll be there.
Huh? It's a 2.5 hour drive for you, Bubba.
I know how long it is.
And you gain an hour. Yeah, and you gain an hour. So shit, come on. Yeah, we're going for sure, for sure. We got some sweet tickets. I'm not going to miss that for the world, because I'm leaving right after it. No, it's fucking awesome. Yeah, come on down. It's our year. We can't miss this one. This is we're going to look good this year. I can feel it.
Well, absolutely, man. Well, we'll wrap up here, man. But I just appreciate you taking some time with me today. And like I said, and I'm not just saying it because you're on the show, but just being from Nashville, seeing your success, you know, I'm rooting for you and I'm proud of you, even though you don't know me from now.
No, dude, it means the world. Thank you, my brother. Just know, now that I know you and what you're doing, I have to tighten up, baby, tighten up. I see you down here this way.
Absolutely. I'm just a long searching for new ways I can get gone. I'm a paddle to the highway. If you ever wonder why we write these songs, 'cause I'm only one drink away from the devil. I'm only one call away from home. Yeah, I'm somewhere. All right, guys, huge thank you to Jelly Roll for taking some time here on the Talk To Me podcast. And towards the end there, man, we broke down Jelly Roll's, man, what were we calling it again? The Mount Rushmore of underground hip-hop artists, kind of the independent guys out there.
Sure.
He goes with Twisted. He goes with ICP, Tech N9ne. I think we're going to go with Upchurch, too, one of the newer guys on the list. But those guys, man, I don't know your stance on like ICP or Twisted or Tech N9ne, but as a business, those guys nail it.
Oh, dude! First of all, I love ICP. Don't get me started. I'm not hardcore enough to go to the Juggalo fests.
Right.
But I've been to several shows. I've been sprayed down with the Faygo. You know, right? I'm down with the clown for a long time, and Riddlebox, and Riddlebox is kind of my album that I like with them. But they're fantastic. Twisted was really good. Where the only thing that I didn't hear in the top five that you told me was I didn't hear Cottonmouth Kings. Do we not count Cottonmouth Kings in this mix?
Well, I guess you could. I mean, they had their own label and stuff there for a little bit. This is just his, you know, his four of the Mount Rushmore that he went with on that one. So yeah, I mean, you could definitely put Cottonmouth Kings on there. They had their, like I said, their own label.
Sure.
They did that whole deal too. But I think of the big guys, ICP is obviously number one.
Sure.
Twisted has definitely, they've been on the podcast many a time. Every single time those episodes do huge numbers. They have such a huge fan base, and they've branched out enough to where they're different enough from ICP that they're kind of in their own lane now. They're really getting, they're doing their own, you know, the Astronomicons and things like that, and just getting into the movie side of things, and just so much stuff going on in the Twisted camp. And then Tech N9ne, we talk about a little bit in the interview. He did Slipknot or the Knotfest Iowa.
Sure.
He comes out, he killed it. And he's just one of those self-made dudes. You know, that's one genre of music that really gets, you know, like we were talking about earlier with Jelly Roll, like, you know, 180 million views of something. Right. If you're a single artist and you get 180 million views on YouTube, and I know everybody claims, you know, that the streaming services don't pay, but they do pay if you have a ton of plays. You know, if you get the right numbers, you're going to make some money.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Going back to Tech N9ne, I'll be honest, I didn't know a whole lot of Tech N9ne at all before I saw him. I was aware of him, but then when I saw him, he played at Rock on the Range one of the years. And it was the biggest applause, biggest audience of anybody that played. And I mean, there were, if I'm not mistaken, that was like Slayer and Guns N' Roses and those bands were on the same Rock on the Range, I believe. And Tech N9ne, I mean, he came out and just was like,
yeah,
you know, it just
same with Iowa. Yeah.
Yeah. It just blew up, man. So The weird thing is I think there's a lot of the hardcore metalheads that think that rap is bullshit and that people aren't into it. But the truth is, you know, going back to like Limp Bizkit or Stuck Mojo and whatnot, it's been around now for a while, obviously Anthrax.
Right.
You know, it's been around for a while and it's been accepted more than people give it credit for. Hell, we're on Knotfest. I've always argued that Slipknot is somewhat of a rap styled band because Corey Taylor's rhythm, the way he spews lyrics is definitely out of the rap game more than it is out of any metal genre that you would ever pick, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of hip hop in the course of metal. And certainly these guys that did it independently, well, that's how rap started. Rap was the independent game because they couldn't get deals, you know, when it was street music back in the early, Run DMC days and all that stuff. So, you know, I love that there's bands like Tech Nine or artists like Tech Nine or Twisted or, you know, even guys that have come up and have transitioned from independent to big names, guys like 2 Chainz. Yeah. 2 Chainz was a huge independent success. Yeah. And I think his independent success is what launched him into more mainstream stuff. What about the guy with the weird teeth, Tekashi 6ix9ine?
Yeah, Tekashi, yeah.
Before he, you know, became a snitch, I mean, that guy didn't have any, he didn't have a machine at all. It was just him and his phone.
Right.
You know, and he was doing, how many zillions of hits did that guy do? You know, he was doing hundreds and millions of plays on every video he did.
Yeah, we were, you know, I've been talking a lot lately about in the morning on the way to school, I let my son listen to music and he listens to a lot of rap, right?
Okay.
And judging by the production quality of some of the stuff he listens to, I just assumed these were underground dudes that he found on YouTube or something. Sure. And one day we were sitting at a drive-thru and we started talking about my music versus his music and... Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how popular some of these dudes were. Oh, and yeah. Spotify will tell you how many millions of plays they have a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a single metal band that I could find that had more monthly listeners than some of the stuff he listened to. Like it was, you know, some of the dudes he like dudes you probably never even heard of, and like NLE Choppa and dudes like that.
Yeah. Oh,
and they have more. He has more monthly listeners than Metallica.
I know it's nuts.
And I get that, you know, it's a format thing. Spotify is a younger generation. A lot of the dudes that listen to Metallica bought the CDs, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, in that one instance, it really hit me how popular some of these dudes are that I thought he just found on SoundCloud or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, we have to admit it. We're old now. We're the old guys in the right? room. You know, the young guys are, I'm sure you remember 20 years ago or whatever, when you'd listen to your dad would be playing music and you'd be like, what is that? And he'd be like, oh, this is back from my day, you know,
yeah.
whatever it would be. And now we're those guys, you know, I hate to admit it, but hell, we were talking about Judas Priest at the beginning of the show. That's to the kids today, your son, he's like, what is that? What is that old music that you're listening? And it is old music. It's 50 years old, you know.
The timeline's a bit off, but I remember seeing a meme a while back of, we are as far away from Smells Like Teen Spirit as Smells Like Teen Spirit was from Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like, and when, you know, I'm obviously younger than you, but when, you know, like when Smells Like Teen Spirit came out, it's the fresh new thing. Stairway mm-hmm. to Heaven is, you know, out, you know, state or the classic rock staple, you know. Mm-hmm. So now all of my stuff's old. I'm an old man,
dude. And I'm ancient. Dude, I saw Led Zeppelin, for God's sakes. So I'm as old as they get, I guess, because I, you know, it's amazing I know anything about these rap bands because I actually am old enough to have seen Led Zeppelin.
Right.
But you know, it is weird that it's weird that we're getting to a place age wise,
right,
that I don't know about you, but I never thought that I would age out of music.
Right.
I never thought that and I'm starting to feel more and more like I'm aging out of music. Right. It's, you know, I always listened to a lot of stuff that people didn't listen to. And even the stuff that I always thought, you know, like a lot of the rap that I listen to, the kids that are rap fans are like, oh, that's classic. That's, you know, Tupac, All Eyes on Me. That's classic. You know, it's like, wait a minute, that was like my shit. You know, you know, it's funny how it works that way.
That could be your new show, the classic rap show.
Yeah, I could do one. Dude, what's funny is I went to a rap show, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years ago. I went and saw Ice Cube. It was Ice Cube, LL Cool J. Again, I'm dating myself because these are all old, but right. Ice Cube, LL Cool J, De La Soul, and somebody else. Oh, Public Enemy.
Oh, nice.
And it was one of the funnest times I've had because I knew all the tunes, and it was a fun time. And man, you just don't get, you know, you don't get show, even the metal shows that I go to now, they don't have that kind of energy anymore, you know? And that's the saddest part about it, is when you start seeing your bands that used to be crazy and now they're not, you know?
Right.
You know, that's when it's sad.
Oh yeah. We went to see final Slayer tour, you know, Primus, mm-hmm. Ministry, Phil Anselmo. And I'm watching Phil Anselmo, and I'm used to seeing Pantera at the big venue and people tearing seats out of the rafters and, mm-hmm. you know, crowd surfing and pits and everything else. And it was the tamest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was so bummed out watching the crowd.
Sure. Oh, dude. And with Anselmo, you know, and I love Phil, you know that, me and you are both nice. Pantera heads, and love Phil. Phil commented on a chapter I wrote in one of my books about him, which like the ultimate moment for me right. was Philip holding up my book on, thanks so much, brother, for writing this chapter. You know, I was like, geez, this is like the coolest shit ever. But watching him perform these days, and he's performing better than he has in years.
Yeah.
But it ain't the early Pantera. It's not the jumping off the risers and stomping around, and you know, it's not that Phil anymore. It's find a spot in the middle of the stage, put your foot on the monitor and stand.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different Phil.
It's definitely a different Phil. Yeah. I mean, I've seen that, you know, the Pantera, the vulgar display of Pantera that he's been doing.
Sure.
I think I've seen it 2 or 3 times, and every time it's great to see him doing those songs, but you still harken back to those days. I mean, it's any band that we grew up listening to that now are kind of out there just getting through the show.
Yeah. You know who, and they're old enough now that I think we can put it in this category. You know who really doesn't do that, who is still as energetic as they were from day one, is the, you know, the hosts of this show, Slipknot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They still bring it with rage. I mean, from start to finish, every song, you know, I have to imagine that those guys get off stage and just collapse in the dressing room because, right. they're, you know, now they're in their mid-40s or whatever, or probably some of them in their 50s, I think.
They are, yeah.
You know, and they're still bringing it 150 miles an hour, man, which is a testament to them that they've been able to not only keep it up, but keep themselves in shape. And, you know, obviously Corey Taylor, I don't think he's ever run out of energy, but, right. you know, but I mean, all of those guys are really energetic live and they still bring it hard, which is a testament to them. And it's why they've been able to survive, because their act never got tired. Figuratively. Absolutely. Or literally.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the all the new metal bands are kind of turning into those like festival headliners, big arena acts now. You know, like we've got tickets for Tool coming up. We've got, you know, every time we see a festival lineup now, it's Korn and it's Deftones and System of a Down. Sure. System of a Down, a band back to the original Judas Priest talk, they don't like each other at all, but they know that they need the four of those guys to be System of a Down.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't get paid as Surge or as
Dirt Scars on Broadway and all that stuff.
Those don't do any business. They have to get together. They hate each other. They hate each other's politics. Yet they come up on stage and do their hour, you know. But dude, even the other bands that have survived, like Korn's not nearly as energetic as they used to be.
Right.
Jonathan Davis kind of is, but the rest of the band just kind of stands around and plays. And obviously Fred Durst has made a joke of the fact that
that he's old,
you know, with the whole dad vibe thing. So certainly most of those guys have slowed down, man. It just, I guess it's the nature of the beast. Getting old sucks.
Yeah, right. Oh man. Yeah. Anytime I think about touring and whatnot, I'm just like, oh, it just sounds terrible.
Like, you don't think you want to get back into the minivan and go back out and do primer dates all over the country?
No. like in multiple tours, we would be in the 15 passenger van or we, you know, whatever. And I would always sleep like in between the seats on the floor, like, you know, it's almost like a, like wiggled in between, you know, these, the bottom of the of the seats and whatnot. And just like, right. And, but, you know, when you're in your 20s chasing the dream, you know, you're going to do that. You know, now that I'm in my 40s, I'm like, I don't know. Like, yeah.
Now you won't even lay down on a bed if it doesn't have a comfortable pillow.
Right. I'm calling down to the front desk.
Right.
Excuse me. Can you please send up some more pillows?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, man. Last episode with Rob Rivera, man. The top five drummers, man. That definitely you know, sparked some conversation online. So if you guys are checking this out, make sure to kind of give us your you know, Mount Rushmore. There we go. Mount Rushmore of independent rap dudes. And, you know, there's somebody we talked about the other day that you didn't bring up was like even like dudes like Master P and
sure.
And like things like that. Like there's so many of those little cottage industries that popped up mm-hmm. over the years from dudes that the one thing that I think the rap dudes got right that the rock dudes didn't is the rock dudes had a formula back in the day where you would play some shows and you would get some recognition, then you would get signed. You mm-hmm. know, the rap dudes, they didn't have the signed element. So they would kind of, you know, take it into in a business sense of they knew that they could make 1,000 CDs, sell them for $10 a piece.
Sure.
And that's $10,000. Then you reinvest and, you know, you can keep. They understood the money side of it better than the rock dudes.
Yeah. Well, that's why those guys all seem to have money, where all of these guys are all in their now 60s and 70s and they're still out playing, you know, the local casino, the rock guys, because none of them were smart at all with their money. They just signed a contract and said, "Oh, we can keep 2 cents off of every $18." Yeah. Let's right. do it. You know, and they all did. Yeah, the rap guys, even, and I don't know if we call this independent or not. Well, I mean, what would you call Death Row? The original, now before they right. signed with Interscope.
Yeah,
I think that would.
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, but you know, you did come in with a little bit of name recognition with Dre and stuff like that, but you still, yeah. you know, you I would say Death Row would yeah. be considered.
But
kind
even
of in this.
But even Dre, he wasn't really coming from a major. He was coming from Ruthless. Which True. Was Easy's label.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, on that, and
but he's still coming from NWA, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But NWA itself was kind of independent. Remember, nobody wanted them. Right. I mean, dude, if you watch the movie, they were pressing those and selling them at dance clubs.
Right. And that's, you know, those, there's always those stories out there of, and I think it's Hammer. I think I've brought this story up a couple of times, but you know, Hammer at one point was like, "Why would I sign with you? Because I would have to sell a million records you to make the same I would if selling 100,000 out of my trunk, and I think I'm going to be able to sell 100,000 without you. So why should I sign with you?" Kind of thing. And then, you know, you hold the cards, you hold the leverage in that side of it.
And ironically, he's one of those that went completely broke,
right? But he's too legit to quit. So
he certainly is.
And before we get out of here, man, you know, we've been doing recommendations on the show, man. What do you got to recommend to the people this week, Chris?
Well, since we're talking rappers and since we're talking about independent rappers, I'm going to recommend the new EP from our friend Scribble.
Oh, nice.
Scribble has a new EP. He's an independent guy, sort of. He's distributed through Sony now, but he's he's a fantastic rapper. If you like kind of the horror rap or the blood and guts, again, ICP-ish type of a thing. So check out Scribble, Skribbal, I believe.
I believe that is right. And he's done a Talk To Me theme in the past. We'll have to get him to update it. I think it have some Chris Aiken-isms in there. Sure. I didn't come prepared, so I'm going to give you a couple of recommendations. Obviously, the easiest one. For all the Star Wars nerds out there, the Book of Boba Fett's actually pretty good. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
But then a side cast, and it's not the John Drake Star Wars podcast, but another Star Wars podcast by my friend Adam Russell of Story of the Year, the vocalist of Yellow Card, and one of the dudes from another band I can't remember. They do a podcast called Think the Maker, and they've been doing really good episodes right after the show comes out, because there's so much going on in Star Wars. I am not going to sit here and tell you that I know exactly what I'm watching, but sure. I know there's something going on more than what I'm comprehending. And so it's a great addition to the show if you watch the show and then you listen to the Think the Maker podcast. And I'm sure John Drake and the Nerf Herder Council are doing some stuff too. I just haven't seen it on my feed lately, so I don't know if they're still doing episodes or not.
Yeah, but, they are.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to recheck my feed. But it's just fun to hear nerds that are so into it that see a character in the background and be like, oh my God, it was so cool that they had this one guy that was only in the cartoons and blah, blah, you know, just that level of nerddom and fandom I love. So I love watching the Book of Boba Fett and the Mandalorian. The Mandalorian was great.
Yeah,
listening to the Nerf Herder afterwards and just hearing what you're seeing is more than what you're comprehending at the time.
Right. Just don't go to John's house and get all drunk with him and then try and talk to him. Then it gets weird.
And I'll also recommend the number one team in the AFC, the Tennessee Titans. We're on a bye week this week. You know, we got the only bye in the AFC. Right. So we'll see you guys in the divisional round. So if you guys need a football team to root for, if your team is out, come hit me up and we'll talk some Tennessee Titans.
Well, I guess I'm going to be rooting for a Titans Packers Super Bowl, which is completely not what the NFL wants, but
well, they could.
The NFL wants, tell me if you think I'm wrong, NFL wants Tampa Bay, New England.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some storylines in there. I want Tennessee and just to, honestly, I don't want the Packers because I fear the Packers, but I think most of the other teams in the NFC we could probably go toe to toe with.
Yeah. Well, who else? Who could beat the Packers in the NFC? The Cardinals. The who else is even in the
Rams? Cardinals. Rams,
no.
Tampa Bay.
49ers. Yeah.
Cowboys.
I don't think none of those sound like the team that's going to beat the Packers.
Right. Well, they just need to slip up, man.
Yeah. Hey, let them all beat each other up so the Titans have a clear.
Right. Hey, I don't care if it's everyone's third string ahead of us, as long as we can get to the Super Bowl. I will say, and as we depart here, one thing I did love about this interview is the fact that when Jelly Roll popped up on my screen, him and I are both wearing Titans hats. First time in podcast history that that the artist I was interviewing was a Titans fan also. And we talked a little Titans in the interview.
Very nice.
Awesome. Good times. Well, guys, until next week, you know, here at the Talk to Me podcast, that bass players are people too, and we are always for the low end here. So Chris, until next Thursday, man, we will talk to you guys soon.
See ya.
The Talk to Me podcast, presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk to Me podcast.